Doug, take us back to January 31st, 1968, and introduce us to Stanley Parker and the Echo Company.
So Stanley Parker is 19, having just turned 20 when he's entered the Army. It's evening. He and his platoon from the 101st Airborne have arrived on a scrubby hilltop in northern South Vietnam, and at about 4 in the morning, the Tet Offensive commences throughout all of South Vietnam. Some 100,000 North Vietnamese and Viet Cong troops attack simultaneously throughout major capitals and districts. And Stanley Parker and his friends are overwhelmed and must begin then fighting for their lives through the night. And then the book, The Odyssey of Echo Company, really chronicles the entire journey, the survival of Stanley Parker and the platoon, and then follows him back to Vietnam in present day. So it's a really emotional, action-driven story, but in the end, it's about the human experience of these people surviving this event.
You yourself, I understand, have not been in the military, but family members have been. All of your books, Horse Soldiers, In Harm's Way, which have been very successful, have been war stories. What is it about war stories that so draws you?
What draws me to war stories are these moments of existential crisis that ordinary people find themselves in, and during which they have to make very difficult decisions at these really chaotic and morally complex moments. And there are people, in the end, the way I write these books, that we know, that whom are our neighbors or our family members. These aren't books about superheroes. And I write these stories because it gives me a chance, as a citizen and as a neighbor and as a parent and a husband, to kind of glimpse into our own sense of humanity. And I try to write and bring to life moments of gentle humanity amidst chaos and violence, because these are the after effects of these wars that we live with today. So
yeah,
Vietnam ended a long time ago, but in this case, I'm arguing that we're still living with that war.
Well, I think you're right. I seem to hear more about the Vietnam War again lately, and I'm curious on your thoughts on that. We've just had Ken Burns' documentary about it. Maybe there's a kind of a reexamination, and in some ways it's a different war than any other, although I suppose you could argue that for all wars. But probably, for me, it seems the most in the sense of how we treated the people that served over there when they came back.
You're exactly right. When the young men and women, let's not forget the women and the families at large who were part of the Vietnam experience,
yeah,
either returned from Vietnam or welcomed their family members back, the overwhelming message was, we don't want to know. And I mean this quite literally. Stanley Parker has returned from Vietnam. He is in Gary, Indiana. He walks to his mailbox. And in the next driveway over is his neighbor, a World War II veteran. Mm-hmm. And he says, Stanley, I haven't seen you in a while. And Stan says, well, I've been in Vietnam. Man, you wouldn't believe it over there. And the older gentleman says, well, we don't need to talk about that right now. And that really has been our response. And as a storyteller, what the Odyssey of Echo Company tries to do is tell the story of what it felt like for millions of people like Stan Parker to have fought in that calamitous war and then come home and buried it. And if anything, if you could slide the book across the table to your uncle and say, so this is this, what do you think? Were you there? I mean, yeah. Then to me, the book is a success, because silence is another kind of killer. And that's one of the hopes for the book.
So introduce us a little more to Stan himself. And why did you choose Stan? You know, there's so many vets out there. What led you to him?
There are so many vets, and I'm hopeful that the story of Stan Parker and his platoon mates from Echo Company kind of literally echoes with the millions of others of infantry soldiers who fought there. I chose Stan in a way because I was standing in a Chinook helicopter in Bagram Airfield in Afghanistan, mm-hmm. researching horse soldiers, and Stanley Parker was still in the Army, and he was in the helicopter. And we began a conversation, which began in 2005 and really is still continuing today. And the fruit of that is the book itself. Stan had read my first book, In Harm's Way, about the sinking of the Indianapolis. He had liked it and began talking about it. And I said, Stanley, I think that this, you know, I'm glad that you like this World War II book, but I think it's a book about young men surviving something. That's what really gets to me. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, what about Vietnam? So we're flying. I just want to point out, I'm flying over small villages in Afghanistan in broad daylight and a very large target in the air. And I'm not concerned, but I'm kind of fascinated by this. But what Stan wants to talk about is Vietnam. And I realized that he'd never really come home.
Mm.
So the book is that homecoming, I think, for him and lots of others. And it began just that way, this conversation in the helicopter, kind of coincidentally, America's other foray into guerrilla warfare, which would be Afghanistan in the 21st century, with Stanley having been in the other major one in Vietnam, you know, in the 20th century. So he spans, he goes from one to the other.
Did you feel that in talking with him and, of course, doing extensive research with others as well, is he more or less typical of the Vietnam vet and how what he went through and how he felt about it?
You know, having now toured from Seattle to Tampa and all cities in between, I can say definitively yes.
Mm.
And what I can even say with some either greater sadness but hopefulness for the book is that his feeling of solitude within this experience is universal. I was in Raleigh, North Carolina, speaking to a group, and a gentleman stood up in a suit and tie and explained that he had been the CEO of a large company, and never in his professional life had he told anyone that he'd been in Vietnam.
Wow.
And this message back to me was echoed all over the place. And what I realized is that you have a generation of Americans, not just the guys and the women who served as well, but their families, too, who are treating Vietnam as an unfinished story. It's a secret.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question for everyone listening is, well, what happens if we just kind of release the energy that we are expending keeping that secret, acknowledge the pain of this moment, and then move forward? We don't have to linger there. But you talked earlier about so many things, Vietnam. I think it's because it is the 50th anniversary of so many key dates. That is the Tet Offensive itself of January of 68. And then the other thing is that these guys are reaching 70.
Yeah.
I don't know in your experience, but in mine, doing some reporting, especially with World War II veterans, it was at that age that they began to really open up and talk more. And I think we're at that inflection point with this generation. So
So enough time has gone by?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's hard when you're 30, 40 to talk, you know, doing these interviews, and it's moving. It's hard when you're 30, 40 to talk in the way that these guys talk to me. It's hard to let those feelings of vulnerability and fear and so on, bubble up into your professional working life when you're a parent moving forward. But I challenge anyone listening to, at a dinner party or at the next family get-together, just bring up Vietnam, not in a kind of, not an aggressive way at all, even a probing way, but just in the way that you would talk about Iraq or Afghanistan or Korea, or, hey, did you see that special on History Channel about the Civil War?
Mm-hmm.
If you get someone going on it, the depth of feeling in the room is titanic. It's a story that I felt needed to be told.
When you did all of this research, when you talked to Stan and all of these other vets and other people, Were there any unexpected insights? Did you feel like you pretty much knew what you were getting into, or did you come away from this project changed yourself as well?
I did come away from this changed in that I realized a key thing about my life as a reporter and an author, which is that in this case of Vietnam, what these people I was meeting really wanted most of all was simple acknowledgement. So it's as if I was just listening to them, and the simple act of listening to them tell this story without my interrupting had an amazing effect on me and them. So in other words, we spent a lot of time in the United States, and there are some brilliant books written about how we feel about the war geopolitically, socially, of course. This, you know, it was, I think, you know, especially the Tet or the year of 68 was a major rift in American society where lots of things started cleaving left and right and hawk and dove. But I tried to just separate all that, the war from the soldier, and listen, let them tell the story. And that's all they wanted. They didn't want me to like the story or reject the story, agree with them. It was, it's really quite astounding, the level of denial, I guess you would say, that we've had about the effect that this war has had just among our general population.
I'm curious then how Stan felt about the book once it was finished. Did he finally feel that his story had been heard?
He did, and he does. I read, you know, parts of the book back to some of the guys for accuracy, and Stan reviewed the manuscript in a way, because in some ways it's a biography of Stanley Parker. And there are so many dates, and I spent so much time on his personal life. He said to me early, and he did not ask for anything to be changed or removed. He really, as did a bunch of the other guys in the platoon, showed a great deal of bravery in talking honestly about his feelings and his actions during this time. I mean, I really admired that among them. The biggest change, though, came when we went back to Vietnam, which closes the book. And maybe I won't give it all away, but there's a return trip that Stan Parker makes with his platoon buddy Tom Soles from the Pacific Northwest that really, ironically, was Stanley Parker and Tom's homecoming from Vietnam. It was in, and to witness it and report on it was really quite an honor.
Is he going to join you for any part of your book tour? Have you talked about
that? He has.
Oh, wonderful.
He has, and I mean, we were in Tampa together and Denver and Colorado Springs, and there is a very moving reunion with Stan Parker and his other platoon mate, John Lucas, together with myself at the Tattered Cover bookstore in Denver.
Oh, I love that place.
Broadcast on Book TV.
Yeah.
And you can find that on my website. So just the reason that you asked earlier, why write these books, I'm not always sure why. I'm interested in the question of, you know, who are you and how did this experience change you? Which is separate than a political question about a more macro view of the political aspects of this war in particular. But so you write the book, and then John Lucas from Michigan is compelled to get in his car with his wife Sharon and drive from Michigan to Colorado Springs to visit Stan Parker. And they haven't seen each other in several decades. And it turns out that John came to the bookstore and had never really spoken about Vietnam before, except on camera for this book TV segment. And this is what I mean by John Lucas reaching the age in his life where he wants to not live in this moment again, but at least explore it.
Yeah.
And then move on. That is really, it's really gratifying to see that.
Yeah. Powerful stuff. And maybe there's part of the attraction to war stories. Unfortunately, there's probably no more powerful human experience than going through war.
No one is the same, you know, and That, you're exactly right. That is the faceted quality of this experience. It is a absolutely extraordinary experience that is experienced by ordinary people, and no one is the same after combat, and yet they come home and return to a life that is so totally different. And part of the book actually focuses on that homecoming and how Stan and others did adjust to that war.
It occurs to me that that phrase we always hear, thank you for your service, is not enough. That what we really need to do, as you say, is sit down and listen to the stories.
Yeah, you're right. My friend David Finkel wrote an amazing book called Thank You for Your Service. David's an editor at the Washington Post, and the whole book is just about the meaning of that phrase. And I've been thinking a lot about it in terms of this book, The Odyssey of Echo Company. And I think what these guys would say to us is, you're exactly right, thank you for listening.
In fact, I some time ago talked to a Marine about a poetry book he had written about his experience in Afghanistan. And one of the things that he said that stuck with me ever since is he doesn't like that phrase at all, thank you for your service, because he says he feels like it lets people off the hook, that he says, wait, you need to hear our stories. You need to make sure that we're not homeless. A lot of us are suffering when we come back. We may not have the health care that we need, and those kind of things. You know, welcome us home and acknowledge us, and that's what we really need, and not just thank you for your service and walk on.
Exactly. And it's interesting you say that, because if you look at the way the Vietnam veteran and then, say, Afghanistan and Iraq veterans, many of them treated completely differently upon their return, but it is still combat and still war. I think when you ask someone to do this, you need to make really sure when they come home that the war is not over for them.
Right.
You know, there's lots that we have to pay attention to. Who was the poet that you interviewed?
That was Bruce Lack here in Portage, Michigan.
Yeah, yeah,
and his poetry book was called Service.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's something I would recommend. He feels very passionately about that. So you've written, like we said before, other books, The Horse Soldiers in Harm's Way. You've also worked as a screenwriter and been part of that process of converting stories to film. How does that feel for you as a writer? Although as a screenwriter, you're more involved.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a jag in that experience of putting a book down on paper and then seeing it on a screen?
Well, Horse Soldiers will come out as a movie in January 19th, 2018, and it's an amazing experience to watch those events, which I reported about, and the book came out, I think, in 2011, come to life. I guess there's no other way to put it. I write in terms of scene and action anyway.
Yeah.
So, I started out my writing life primarily as a poet. And it wasn't until I began writing for Esquire magazine that I started really reporting and writing nonfiction. And so in terms of image and scene and vignette, that came naturally to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so to put it down on paper, I'm seeing it as a movie in my head in some ways already.
Okay.
Except, of course, for the expository parts, which are completely different, but I write what I think you'd call literary nonfiction. So it's you're watching people react over time to things. So and there's just such great storytelling happening, both in television as movies, as everyone is now aware of.
I was struck, too, as I read the book, that you chose to write it in present tense rather than something that was happened in the past. And there must have been some thought process to that decision, I imagine, to make it more immediate to the reader? Or why did you decide to write it that way?
Well, thanks thanks for asking that or raising that point. There are two things happened in this book that I've never done in any of my writing in 15 plus years of professional writing, which is I've written in the present tense, and I've also used the first person pronoun I, largely at the end of the book. Here's why. In the book, I'm trying to do two things. Dramatize and make the reader actually experience the shifts in time that happen for Stan Parker and for many people who've experienced what Stan experienced, which is the war seems utterly in the past, but also completely in the present, and that time has frozen in some ways, and the whole idea of a flashback is in and of itself, you're living in the moment, but you're flashing back to something that happened, and it's happening now as if it's still happening. So as I was writing and reporting, especially at the end of the book, there's a kind of climactic scene where things are unfolding, and it was happening now. And what was happening then is something that had happened to Stan Parker back in 1968. We were back in Vietnam in 2014, and those two time periods seemed to bend around and meet each other. So that's how it ended up in the present tense. The other thing was, throughout the book, if you read carefully, I keep asking this question, who's watching?
Yeah.
And the first section called Invocation opens with that. And in fact, the very last words in the entire book include that same question, who's watching? And because what I discovered, yes, how this book changed me in reporting it, what I discovered was the central question seemed to be, who is authoring this moment? Who is in charge? What's the guiding principle? What is the story here? If so many chaotic things are happening and they don't seem to be adding up into any kind of unified whole, which is seemed to be Stan Parker's experience, the book itself is about the power of storytelling to kind of order that universe and make some sense out of it. So, which raises the question then, who's watching? And so the present tense is kind of meant to watch you see an answer develop of that question, and also just to raise it for the reader. You know, if this has happened in American society, how should we relate to it? Maybe we should be watching. Maybe we should be aware that a generation of Americans are carrying around this pain and this uncertainty of their experience, and just be aware of it. Acknowledge it, as we've talked about earlier.
Well, thank you so much for taking time to talk with us, Doug. I appreciate it. And in January, I'm going to be looking for Horse Soldiers on the screen.